Good morning, and you are continuing to listen to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. Today is Monday, November 7th, 2011. My name is Cecil Prescott, and we thank you for joining us this morning. We'll continue our ongoing conversation about Social Security, the federal deficit, jobs, and things like that. It's an ongoing story, and specifically we want to begin this morning by talking about a group of people who will have a major impact on all of our lives, but has been given little or not enough attention, I believe. So hopefully we'll have a conversation this morning to talk about this so-called super committee, get some clarification of who they are, what they're doing, and then continue about what we can do. I want to allow you to hear our guest this morning. Joining us this morning are in studio are Greg Margolis from Portland Jobs with Justice, Francisco Holdman, also from Jobs with Justice and Veterans for Peace. And joining us by phone is Nancy Altman, who is the co-director of Social Security Works and co-chair of Strengthening Social Security Coalition and Campaign. She's also the author of Battle for Social Security from FDR Vision to Bush's Gamble. I wanted to thank all of you for joining us this morning. Nancy, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, Francisco and Greg, for being in studio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nancy, I thought maybe we would begin with you by just laying out the ground for us. Tell us about the origin of this so-called super committee.
The super committee is a joint committee of Congress that was put in place by that debt limit legislation. You know, there was the big fight this summer over raising the debt ceiling. And what came out of it was a fast-track process, very undemocratic, very secretive, where there are six Republicans and six Democrats deciding behind closed doors how to change the entire federal budget of the United States, including programs like Social Security that are not part of the budget and don't contribute to the deficit. So it is required to report by just before Thanksgiving. Once it does report, its recommendations come with extraordinary speed and extraordinary power. It can't be amended and so forth. So this is what Congress has planned for everyone for Christmas, because they're going to vote on this thing right before Christmas.
I have a December 23rd date. It might be, you know, Merry Christmas or not. So
exactly, a kind of Scrooge Christmas.
I think that probably will be the case. So they'll come, and we'll talk more, because I want to reemphasize this false notion that we keep hearing about Social Security and the deficit. We keep hearing that. But just clarification in terms of this super committee. So they'll come with a recommendation. The Congress will vote on it up or down. If they do not come with a recommendation, or if the Congress do not vote in favor of it, what happens?
If they deadlock, there is an automatic cut that doesn't occur until January of 2013. But there is a cut half in defense programs, half in domestic, with some programs excluded. But there is a year to go to modify it or change it and improve it. So a lot of us think that reaching deadlock is both the most democratic and the best thing to happen. But they are required to cut between $1.2 trillion and $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. If they don't do that, or they only reach part of that, there is this automatic cut that would take place starting in 2013.
And the committee members are evenly divided between the House and the Senate, between Democrats and Republicans. How did the leadership in the House and the Senate choose the members?
That's exactly right. And what we were hearing at the time they were chosen were that they were really stand-ins for the leadership and for their caucuses. But what we are now hearing as we go around, I'm based in Washington, D.C., and we're talking to the members and the staff, and what we are hearing are a lot of members saying, and staff saying, we don't know what's going on. So it's a really an effort, I think, to avoid political accountability, and it's important for all of us to make our voices heard.
Speaking of, just one more question in terms of the committee. I'm just looking quickly over the list of members, and for those of you here within the Pacific Northwest, Patty Murray, Senator from the state of Washington, is a co-chair. You know, there's maybe a couple of people that I see are pretty progressive, and also some people are pretty scary. So do you think it's possible for them to reach any consensus?
I'm fearful that they may. You're right, the Republicans all have signed the Grover Norquist pledge, the pledge not to raise taxes. Mm-hmm. They also all voted for the Paul Ryan budget with privatized Medicare. The Democrats are more progressive, but they did put forward a package that leaked to the press and reportedly had cuts in Social Security for current beneficiaries, had cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, had cuts in lots of other programs, and the stumbling block is over the tax revenue. So I'm afraid that the Democratic elites are not representing the American people on this.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. We're speaking about Social Security and the Super Committee. We have joining with us on the phone is Nancy Altman, who is the co-director of Social Security Works. And in studio are Greg Margolis and Francisco Holdman. They're with Portland Job with Justice. And we'll widen our conversations to include them. But I just wanted to make sure that all of us have some clear understanding of what is at stake. Nancy, what are you asking for people to do? Should we contact the members of our of the super committee? Should we contact our individual congressional representatives? How?
Absolutely both, because all the members will have to vote on this. And I think the message, I'm delighted that you have people from Jobs with Justice, because the answer to all of this is to get the economy going and so that Americans have good-paying jobs. That's the way to get the deficit down, not this cutting of necessary benefits. So the from our perspective, what we're asking people to do is to call their members and say, no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. We are also asking, you know, writing letters to the editor, talking to neighbors, making voices heard. It's really the theme that has the Occupy Wall Street idea that the 1% is thriving while the 99% are not is really the message here, that this super committee represents the 1%. And what we want to say is we vote and the 1% has only 1% of the vote, so you better listen to us, or you're not going to continue to represent us. You work for us. So it is a message of think about the 99% and do not cut these vital programs.
Excellent, excellent. Let's bring in Greg and Francisco here. They've been very active here on the local scene, the Occupy movement here. And just do an incredible amount of organizing and outreach. So, and actually, I'm looking at your button, Greg, and it says Occupy Globally. Okay. Tell us something about what you've been doing. What's Jobs with Justice been doing in terms of this movement?
Well, you know, Jobs with Justice nationally is 23 years old, and we just had our 20th anniversary here in Portland. So this general kind of work has been going on for a long time, and as you might imagine, the opportunities that have come from the Occupy movement have really accelerated the work we've been doing and provided a lot more resource and support and numbers in the street for street heat. I totally agree with Nancy that the best thing that can happen with this super committee is that
is that it be deadlocked, because that gives, that does two things. First, probably the automatic trigger is better than what they would negotiate. They'd probably, I think, do worse negotiating than what the trigger would amount to. And plus, it gives the opportunity for, if we can, you know, I'm not, I don't have a lot of faith in the electoral process to fix these problems, but if we can get a majority in Congress, we can have the opportunity to just say no to, you know, if we wait till 2013, I think that it allows to stop the trigger. But Nancy may know more about that. Do you know Nancy, if
yes,
that's correct?
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, what we really need are people running for elective office who represent the 99% and will say, because I think that if a message of no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid is a position that represents the overwhelming majority of Americans, we've done much polling on this, and even Tea Partiers do not want to see cuts in these programs. People with union members in their households do not want to see these cuts. Young do not want to see them. Older people don't. So it's a unifying message, but the elites, unfortunately, the Democratic elites sound a little bit too much like the Republican elites and seem worried about deadlocking because of what the message it will send to Wall Street. And what we want to say is that's not the message you should be concerned about. It should be, you should be representing the American people.
Excellent. You are listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. We are speaking specifically about Social Security this morning, but we are open to widening the discussion in terms of how people are responding to the 1%. And we have with us this morning on the phone is Nancy Altman of Social Security Works. In studio are Francisco Holdman and Greg Margolis from Portland Job with Justice. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We encourage you to call and participate in this conversation. Have you contacted your congressional representative, and what do you think of this super committee?
If I can just make one point, just as by way of background, that Social Security does not add a penny to the deficit. It is an extremely conservatively managed program and financed program, and it shouldn't be part of this discussion at all.
So why is it?
As you said in introducing me, I wrote a book called The Battle for Social Security, and this is a program that from the very beginning has had had enemies, people who thought that this was not an appropriate role of government. Tried to hurt the program in the 30s and the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, but at that time they made ideological arguments. It's socialism, it's not right for the middle class, so forth, and the American people rejected that. Starting in the late 70s, an enormous amount of money went into a message that Social Security is a great program but unaffordable or unfair, or you could do better with private pension plans, you know, these kinds of things, which are not true, but they have gained mainstream. The American people still understand that this is a program that works, and they want to make sure that it remains, but a lot of the elites have bought this message that the program is, you know, takes money away from the young, or the variety. I'm sure you've heard all the talking points from the other side. It's been a real campaign to undermine confidence in the future of this program. And the fact is that the program is extremely affordable. The benefits are quite modest, averaging just $13,000 a year, and that's an average. And they are very. It's a very popular program. And as long as the American people want this program, we can afford it and we can have it. But the too many young people have been told that the program won't be there for them, and now we worry about that becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Certainly, certainly. So we can't say it enough, long enough, but Social Security does not contribute a penny towards the federal deficit. Let's just remember that. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We have a caller. We'll go to Gordon. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So this, you just asked a question why they want to mess with Social Security. And basically that's what I see as a huge pot of money at the end of the rainbow for them that they can't touch and tax and make interest off of and shove into the Wall Street and money launder for the drug cartels. So that is that. That's why they want that Social Security. They, and number two, the super committee.
Yes.
All of that is null and void. I don't even know why you guys are really even talking about it. It's completely unconstitutional. No one voted it in as the people. No one did anything other than the dictators in Washington created a dictatorship through a subcommittee of lamos that work for the pharmaceutical and the military complex.
Yep.
So I don't even know why we're justifying or even having a civil conversation about the super committee, because really it doesn't even exist in the sense that all of it is completely void of any legalities. Am I not right about that?
I thank you, Gordon, for raising those points and just for pointing out how broken this system is. Nancy, Francisco, Greg, join in. Yes, Nancy.
First of all, the caller is exactly right that there is, Social Security has a reserve of $2.7 trillion. It's running a surplus of $69 billion, a surplus of $69 billion this year alone. So that the there is a lot of money there, and the American workers have been paying that money in. Everyone on this call, people who work, pay in for that. Life insurance, disability insurance, and old age annuities. I wish the caller were right that the super committee were unconstitutional. It is, it's really an outrage to have it in this kind of fast track way, but it will take a vote of Congress. So it is, unfortunately, I'm a lawyer, it is not, and my husband teaches constitutional law, it's not unconstitutional. I wish it were, and that's why it's so dangerous. It is a way to avoid political accountability. And we've got to make sure that every member knows when our when your listeners call their members, say, you know, we don't care that you're taking an up or down vote on this big package. If you vote for a cut in these programs, even if you say you have to do it, we're holding you accountable.
Let me say this real quick about that big pot of money. You know, that I'm 40, and I'm not going to see any of that money. And I know my daughters at 7 and 9 aren't going to see that money. And, you know, so that's why I think there's so much discouragement amongst the younger people going, wait a second, I'm putting in money every paycheck that I get. There's money going into Social Security, but they're saying by the time I get old enough, it's not going to be there. And why do I need to play this game? And it's really sad. And also, the last thing I really want to say is the motivation. How these the people in America are so bogged down in their jobs to have to pay that rent. Rent is the most important thing to all of our lives, and everybody lives for that 9 a.m. on Monday, and they live for that 6 p.m. on Friday. Those are the two dates that most of the society lives for, and that is just it's just sad. So then they say, okay, I want to go protest, but they can't go for a long time because they'll get kicked out of their house, and then their neighbor doesn't even give a crap about them. And won't help them pick them up because no one cares about each other because everybody's so focused in on themselves to try to just survive nowadays.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's really what you're saying is the reason why we're fighting this fight. It's the reason why the Occupy movement has developed. And there are more young people who are recognizing the fact that they don't have a future unless they fight for change. So I think you're making a point, a good point for organizing and mobilizing and building a movement so that you will get Social Security when you're my age and you
right.
And your kids will get them. So I agree with you about the state of things, but I don't think we should give up. I think that's as good a reason as any. And I think Francisco could probably add
sure.
to this by his own personal situation. He has kids, and he's raising them and going to school.
Hey, thank you,
Carl.
Well,
the last thing that I wanted to say, and I'll let you get off the air, the reason why we don't have jobs, and this is all a smokescreen, all this Social Security and stuff, it's the free trade. We went to Vietnam and killed millions of people. We went to all these places to kill millions of people for the free trade. And as soon as Clinton went into the WTO and as soon as these other presidents went ahead and went with the free trade movement, that's when we lost all of our jobs.
Hey.
So if we get rid of the fair trade, we'll have jobs again.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for raising those points and for allowing us to begin to connect these dots. When we have these conversations, we cannot have them in isolation. And Francisco, I'm going to bring you in on some of our conversation this morning. You've been active locally in organizing. What is your perspective of how people are feeling and are they motivated to take action?
Well, I think, we can see that there's a lot of motivation, that a lot of people have realized that there's, huge problems, a whole spectrum of problems from Social Security to unemployment to, the prison industrial complex to, the military industrial complex. I mean, there's so many people are addressing different issues. Today, we're here speaking about Social Security and Greg and I speak a lot about unemployment. And just the fact that, there's more unemployed than there are jobs. It's not a fact that you can't get the job that's out there. The jobs just aren't out there. So we need to address that. And like Nancy said, this, calling your representative. But a lot of people don't have faith in the representatives anymore. So, we feel like you can call them and call them and call them, and they'll still vote the way you don't want them to vote. So what I would say is get out there in the street and the system has us working, so we don't have enough time to get out there. But this is the time. If there's any other time, this is the time to go out there. Even if you're tired, even if, it's hard, we have to make that extra effort now, because right now we have the momentum and we can actually change things.
Nancy,
there's an important point also, don't believe the lies about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security, it is a very closely monitored program. It is the most affordable, fiscally responsible program. Even if Congress did nothing, it could pay all benefits for the next 25 years, quarter of a century. And after that, it could pay most benefits, 75 cents on the dollar. It could pay 100% of the dollar with just a small amount, 0.6% of GDP, which is the same as the Bush tax cuts for the top 2%. So instead of extending those Bush tax cuts, if they were let to expire and dedicated to Social Security, there would be ample money to even raise benefits for children and grandchildren. So the other side has been really good, has spent $1 billion or more on messaging to convince the American people that young people won't get it, but they will. It's there unless we let the elite change the rules, and so it's not there anymore.
That's an excellent point. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and we have another caller to join us. Joanne, thank you.
Yes, hello. A few years ago, I found out that Social Security was started in the month and year I was born. And then last year, on a cable program, one of Arnie's programs, they had horoscope readings, and I asked if Social Security was going to be destroyed. So in the meantime, this is a done deal. All the crimes against us, ongoing, bank, military, lobbyists, corporations, these crimes are going to go on. They know the Bushes, the Clintons, the military complex, and all those criminals know they can get away with all these crimes. They will never be punished, made accountable for it, while they're alive or after. But anyway, in the meantime, I'm thankful for nothing else. The Occupy movements. Goodbye.
Okay, thank you. I want any of you could respond to this. We heard from that caller, and also I think the previous caller, almost a fatalism, that the odds are stacked against us, that we cannot do anything. The super committee might do what they want. And we have you, I think you, Francisco, you mentioned in terms of people not feeling as if anyone will listen to us. Nancy, you there, and are you in D.C., correct?
I am.
So
I am. And, you know, in response to that, we are fortunately still a nation of one person, one vote. And there are some programs that have widespread support that are, you know, we have plenty of divisive issues, but Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are not among the divisive. And I don't think the fact that people want Americans to have jobs is a divisive issue. I think all Americans support that, but it is a point of making sure that this 99% can have our voices heard. And it is very frustrating when you've got members like Patty Murray, who's quite progressive on these issues and yet has defense contractors in her state and is, you know, could come out the wrong way on the super committee. It is important to make sure that every politician knows that they work for us and that they, if they don't vote the way we want them to vote, we will turn them out of office.
Greg.
One thing that Jobs with Justice, we have an economic crisis committee that formed in 2008 after the crash. And what we developed long ago, over a year and a half ago, was kind of a jobs, not cuts philosophy, seeing that this movement towards cuts. And Nancy, although I agree with you totally about the three big social safety net programs of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, I think we have to take a position that it's no cuts to any safety net programs. And the problem is that while we're talking about these other programs, underneath that, they're, you know, it's kind of like a shell game where they're having us look at these programs while they're pulling away from things like food stamps, which the Republicans are trying to add to this, extensions of unemployment, TANF, these things that are for the most vulnerable people are necessary. So I think we have to take a really militant, strong position that there should be absolutely no cuts. There should be enhancements to those programs until the economy is fixed. And we should create a federal jobs program and get the resources, get the money for that from the super rich and from corporations and from transaction taxes on Wall Street, and by bringing our troops home and redirecting our military money. And we can do that. There are solutions to these problems. We have a global climate problem, and we can be doing infrastructure, green infrastructure, alternative energy, energy efficiency, mass transportation projects that will help reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, and at the same time put people back to work and fix the economy. And we just need the revenue for it, and we just have to demand that that revenue come from where it should be coming from.
I couldn't agree with you more. We are a very wealthy nation. We can certainly afford Head Start and food stamps and Social Security and all of these programs. In fact, Social Security, as I say, is one where everybody contributes from their payrolls, from their wages. But it is, you are exactly right that we've got we've got two wars. We've got to realize what is really the problem here. We have two wars that we've been waging on a credit card. We have tax cuts for the very wealthy. We had a bailout of the banks, and we have a recession, and our response should be to make sure that people get the unemployment insurance they get. If they have to retire early, they can get the early retirement, that they have jobs available to them, that we stimulate the economy. And my book talks about the time of FDR. He understood that the way to put people back to work is to build our infrastructure, to improve our productivity by investing in the future, investing in education, and that's what we should be doing. This austerity mentality, you could cut all these programs and wind up with a worse deficit because it'll throw more people out of work.
And that is Nancy Altman, and her book is entitled The Battle for Social Security, From FDR's Vision to Bush's Gamble. I believe we have another caller online. Mitch, good morning.
Good program this morning. I'd like to thank you for taking my call. I've been down to the Occupy here, and I'm really impressed with some of the intelligentsia that is there. and some of the hope that resides there. You had a previous caller talking about a free trade agreement that got us into where we are. I'd like to debate that point and say that it was a free thinking that we lost the war at. We need jobs. We need truth. We need hope, compassion. We need lots of things. I found something that is totally toxic to the 1%, okay? And it is non-toxic to the 99, and it can create jobs today. Many, 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 many jobs. And that is just the production and manufacturing of hemp. That toxic thing to the 1% is non-toxic to the 99%. And we judge people nowadays based on the content of their urine instead of the content of their knowledge, ability, or status that they grow as they grow in maturity. Excellent. And we have got to get out of this free trade mentality and get on with the we can do better, we deserve better, and we better do better. And just this tiny, tiny plant that Monsanto didn't make, or DuPont didn't make, or Dow didn't make, can actually grab us by the collar and lift us out of this trance, thinking that we can't do any better, and that those that we elect are going to bring us into a reality that is any better for us, other than this slave mentality that most Americans seem to be in, a trance of, well, we got to vote this, we got to vote that.
Okay.
You know, we got to vote to stand together and fight for something more real that's going to help everybody.
There you go. Well said.
Except the 1%.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your call. You know, this this last call countered some of the things we heard earlier in terms that he expressed a possible solution. And I think one of the things I'm gathering from a lot of the movement building that's going around is that, you know, despite the fact that the odds may seem to be stacked against us, there seems to be something motivated by hope. And before we went on air, Francisco, you were sharing some of your thoughts and in terms of what motivates you, or why do you do what you're doing. You've been involved, you know, in a lot of actions. What gives you hope, and why do you keep on getting up at doing what you do?
One thing I noticed the last caller didn't mention love, and oftentimes that's one thing, like the hope and compassion and empathy. But what will win this battle overall is love and a systemic change in our priorities to just believe that people and the love of people over the value of profits, you know, and we can change not only America, but the whole world. The oppression of America goes out through the whole world. So if we change, you know, the whole world will be able to change. I think earlier caller was talking about the fear or the lack of people being able to mobilize, or being fatalistic and not believing that they can make a change. But I think one thing is we have to understand the nature of the problem in the huge spectrum of greed and oppression. But at the same time, know that, you know, it's inevitable that we'll win. That the, well, like Martin Luther King says, that the arc of mankind is long, but is bent towards justice, and that eventually we'll get there. And I believe that this is not only part of a, you know, economic change in this country, but it's a spiritual change in this country. So that's what we're looking forward to, tie it in together to the, you know, this is the brotherhood of mankind, that we can all work together and figure out these solutions, not just economically, but spiritually.
Thank you. Greg?
Yeah, well said, Francisco. And I think the Occupy movement is kind of trying to build a model around just what you're saying. Anybody who hasn't been down to the Occupy site, I really recommend going down there and seeing what's been built. It's amazing. You know, in the press, you're going to see all the negative things, and the fact that there are homeless people there and there are problems there. But what's been built there is really miraculous. People trying to create a different format, a different model of democracy, a consensus model, a horizontal model instead of a hierarchical paternalistic model, which has been historically the model that has created the corruption and criminal action from above. People are trying to spread that idea of love and sharing and community and collective action. So it's really great what's been happening. I'd like to quickly say Francisco spoke at a press conference we had on Friday because the unemployment numbers came out. Mm-hmm. If anybody checked into it, the unemployment numbers went down 0.1% from 9.0 to 9, which is meaningless. First of all, the unemployment, the methodology for unemployment is totally skewed. It's much, much worse than these percentages they're saying. One thing that I discovered in researching this is that the way that they determine unemployment in this country is with by making phone calls to 60,000 households with landlines only. So the representation of the numbers are based on people who have landlines, when at least a third or more of people don't have access to landlines and aren't part of this discussion. And who are those people? Those people are largely young people, impoverished people, people of color in those communities. They're totally undercounted. And one article I wrote said by at least 2 million people undercounted. And then the other thing is, and most people know about this, they don't count people who haven't looked for work in the last 4 weeks, which are discouraged workers. And that amounts to 2.5 million or more people. So there's like almost 5 million more people that are unemployed that aren't even counted. And that's nothing to say of the underemployed, the people who are living below the poverty line, that don't have any medical insurance, that are barely hanging on or are getting foreclosed or are already homeless. And, you know, we have to understand that this is a snowball effect. The more people who lose their homes, the worse it is in that neighborhood. The more people who lose their jobs, the worse it is for businesses. And we've got to force our representatives or say we're changing the system. And I, you know, to do something better. It's just an opportunity is here, and we should take advantage of it, I guess.
Nancy, I'm wondering.
If I can just add, I think those are both terrific statements. I think Francisco's exactly right about love and compassion and hope. Part of the reason that Social Security is so widely popular, I mean, it's 80%, 90% of the population not only support it, but think it's more important than ever. And the reason is that it represents those values, the best of American values. It's a sense of we're all in it together. We are not just these individual divided groups. We are one group, and we are all there concerned about each other. We honor our parents. We honor our neighbors. And we've got to be very watchful, and this is part of the Occupy point, about divisions, that the Occupy is a united cause, but the others are trying to divide it. And so you'll see, and I just saw something about, oh, it's just wrong, that, oh, it's the real wealth gap is between young and old. No, that is not correct. The real wealth gap is between the 99% and the 1% at the top. And it's a tactic of the other side to try to divide us, and yet they shouldn't. We shouldn't let them, because we are all in it together, and that's what the Occupy movement represents, and that's what these programs that are so very popular, Social Security and these others, are all of us in it.
Nancy, I'm wondering, thank you for those comments. I'm wondering, from your position in the nation's capital, what's the impact of the Occupy movement on Congress? Are they hearing anything? Is there a shift in thinking? Are they poo-pooing it? What's the response?
I think, it's something we've got to keep the pressure on. We've got, we've got an Occupy in D.C. There are Occupies all over the country. In fact, there are Occupies in other parts of the world, and some people are talking about occupying the super committee, which I think is a great idea. They're caught in a little bit of a bubble, and I think they are aware of it, but they're hoping it'll go away. They're not, you know, the elite media is not, I think, giving it its due. So I think it's time to double down and really increase our efforts. I think, I'm not sure, Greg or Francisco said before, I know you're tired, but we've got to keep moving. And I think it will make a difference, but I think we've got to keep it nonviolent, keep it focused on these goals that are widely shared by the entire population, and I think eventually, as hard as it is to get a message through the bubble around Washington, I think it will get through.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. My guests today are Francisco Holdman and Greg Margolis of Portland Jobs with Justice, and Nancy Altman. I'm co-director of Social Security Works and author of The Battle for Social Security, From FDR's Vision to Bush's Gamble. We have some callers who have waited, so let's go to Annalisa. Good morning.
Good morning. My encouragement came Saturday when I went to my credit union on Belmont, and it was overflowing with people that changed from their bank to a credit union. Right. And I don't know how many branches of credit unions were open on Saturday, but it was the best day for me when I saw all those people taking their money out of banks and putting it in the credit union. And that when the press or the mainstream media tries to tell us that the people from Occupy Portland or Wall Street or Amsterdam, which my sister informed me there's an Occupy Amsterdam, for instance, that we don't have a focus. Well, last Saturday, that was one focus. And that's how we have to build our movement. And then maybe at some point, if it is possible at all, come together and with millions of people try to make this change. And when I saw that Saturday, I was so pleasantly surprised when I saw all those people.
Thank you.
So anyway, and when it comes to Social Security, the cap is, if I understand it correctly, is $106,000, right?
That's right.
Right. Well, change that. Not for working folk, but for those people that can easily afford it. And when people have reached a certain income, they should have to pay so much more into Social Security, which is not an entitlement program because we pay into it, and then some of those problems will be solved if there are any problems at all. But thank you for the excellent program.
Okay, thank you.
That is exactly right. If they so-called scrap the cap, the program is in long-range balance for 75 years and beyond. And the other point I think the caller makes is exactly right, that we don't have the money, but we have the numbers. And we've got, we are a democracy, and if we just have our voices heard, I think that switching to the credit unions is just a demonstration of our collective power.
Thank you, Greg.
The last caller, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, but you couldn't see it, but I was wiggling my fingers up in the air when you were talking about the money transfer. And remembering about the cap is something that we should have mentioned earlier. I mean, that's a huge aspect. Why is it that after $106,000 you stop paying into Social Security? It makes no sense, and it only makes sense in an unfair economic system, which is what we want to change. So thank you, caller. That was a great call.
Hey, let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO at 9 on the OMO Variety Hour. Look at the constitutional right to peaceful assembly in the context of the occupation movement. Activist John Miller on the People's Budget, the Deficit Commission, the European debt crisis, and the great struggles all over the world. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, here a discussion on the new book, Wild in the City. The guests are urban naturalist Mike Houck and MJ Cody, who edited the book, and author Robin Cody, one of the contributors. At 11 on Health Watch, Jack Norris, co-founder and president of Vegan Outreach, about his book Vegan for Life, Everything You Need to Know to Be Healthy and Fit on a Plant-Based Diet. 11:30 is Madness Radio. Ask, how are our elders treated in nursing homes? Does living in a nursing home promote mental health or make it worse? Carol Hay Collier, psychiatric abuse survivor and activist with the Great Panthers, discusses her work to empower people as we age. And tune in tonight at 6 for The Labor Show with Bill Zimmerman's report on labor joining the Occupy Portland March, and Labor Local 483 discuss the City of Portland announced cut to city services. I want to thank all KBOO members for your support to our recent membership drive. If you are not a member, if you miss our drive, go to kboo.fm and click in on the tip jar. Now, this is More Talk Radio. My guests this morning are Greg Margolis, Nancy Altman, and Francisco Holdman. We're speaking about Social Security and the movement for change throughout the world. We have a couple of callers online. Let's try to get them. Brian, thank you for waiting.
Please hang up.
Oh, we miss Brian. Call again. Josh, good morning. Josh, are you there? We'll try Josh at another time. All this energy that seems to be percolating and throughout this nation and Annalisa, to mention Occupy Amsterdam. I want, perhaps Nancy, you can address the question about this super committee and what happens if they fail. You suggested that it might be, if they fail, that might be good. Say something more about that.
Sure. I'm actually afraid they will not fail.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because they've now put on the table, the Democrats have put on the table substantial cuts, and the Republicans have as well, and the place they disagree is over taxes. So it's really in the Republican hands whether there's a proposal or not. And the Democrats seem really desperate to get a deal. Greg and Francisco have said eloquently that what the American people are hungry for are jobs, not this kind of cutting of the federal budget. I mean, that we learned in the Great Depression that the government, as I think former Senator William Cohen said, everybody hates the government until you need a friend. The government is there really to assist. So I'm a little worried they will reach an agreement, and then it will come roaring through. If they do deadlock, then nothing much happens. I mean, they're all worried that bonds will be downgraded and so forth, but I think it's unlikely. Most economists don't think there'll be any major repercussions from them deadlocking, and instead, there will be substantial cuts, although quite a bit in defense, which is why I'm also afraid they won't deadlock, because the defense cuts will come in as part of the automatic cuts, and that would occur in 2013. So there would then be a year to organize and to keep the defense cuts but stop the domestic cuts.
And the committee, is it majority vote, or do they have to reach a unanimous?
No, unfortunately, it's a committee of 12, and all they need are 7.
So if
one Democrat goes with the 6 Republicans, that's an agreement.
Oh.
And then it's majority in both houses of Congress, no filibuster,
no
ability
amendments
to amend, and it has to come up. So it has to be voted on before December 23rd. Now, of course, they can always change those rules, but no one at this point is talking about that.
Yeah, I almost think that Obama's strategy in this is, and it's kind of been the way he operated throughout, is I'm going to be reasonable, be willing to make compromise, but the Republicans aren't. And I think our hope is that the Republicans continue to draw the line in the sand on taxes, because that's been their mantra and their bottom line for so long that any of them turning on that would probably be lynched by the neocon community. So I'm also hopeful that the deadlock will happen, because I think that's in our best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we'll have a chance to make a quick announcement
certainly
before the end of the program, but I'd like to.
Okay. Yeah. Francisco, I want to turn to you again, because the words you offer in terms of words of inspiration and to allow us to focus, I think it has been very helpful this morning. And I'm wondering, as you talk with people who have not been politically active, who, as you know, just worrying about a job or keeping their job or finding a job, what is it that you share with people that will either enable them to participate in some of these actions or to encourage them to not give up?
Well, I think that's the beauty of the Occupy movement, and it's not just me, but people, like most people, see the way America is right now as a problem. I mean, there's a lot of people that, and they have individual problems. But the beauty is, with this movement, people that usually don't go to protest rallies, you know, they feel open to expressing and sharing their opinion. And so when they come down, not only do they come down with their issue, but they're also able to be educated about other issues. So they learn how this is all tied together, how, you know, it goes beyond capitalism to just man's state of greed, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, you're teaching people, you know, about, you know, well, your problem is Social Security, or your problem is, you know, unemployment, but the other people have a problem with the prison industrial complex, the criminalization of African Americans, the military industrial complex, you know, the military mindset, and just the whole, you know, violence in our society that's and the glorification of the militarization. So people are coming together, and just like one single issue, like taking your money out of the banks and putting it in the credit unions. That's how these different issues, you know, we can, when people come together, they get informed, and then that gives us the power to do something, so we can move on people's individual issues collectively. So it's just a beautiful thing, because it's opened it up to people who might not come to a protest, to a rally, but everyone's getting more politicized. I was just talking to a friend the other night. This is the first time, because it's gone on in Oregon for over a month now. Mm-hmm. This is the first time every day on the news there's something political. Every day. Mm-hmm. So that's an amazing thing.
Yeah. We're about to wind up. I want to thank you, Nancy, for joining us and for your work there in Washington, and for reminding us to make contact with our congressional representatives, correct?
Yes, and thank you so much for having me. Now is really the time. They are supposed to report out a package by November 23rd, so now is really the time for voices to be made, for those calls to be made.
Thank you so much for joining us. And, Greg, I'm going to give you the last word with an announcement.
Okay, thank you. I loved what Francisco just said. I mean, this movement building that's happening now is a great opportunity. I wanted to quickly mention that on November 17th, there's going to be a National Day of Action here in Portland. Among other things, we're going to be organizing a march across the Steel Bridge that's going to happen at 8 o'clock in the morning on November 17th. To get details, you can go to Portland Jobs with Justice website. That's jwjpdx.org, is it? Mm-hmm. .org. And also, for those who don't know about Jobs with Justice, I really suggest you look at the website and look at Facebook and pledge to come five times a year to Other People's Struggle. That's what we ask folks to pledge to do, and that's how we build the movement. Thank you.
I'm a Job with Justice pledger, so I recommend it. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio. We will see you next week.